Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I'm so excited to introduce you to the wonderful guest we have here today. His name is Callum Hurst, and he is from Elevate Strength and Conditioning. Callum, thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure. The pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Well, I'm excited to dive into how he self-describes his story as a wild one. I don't know it, so I'm going to hear it along with you guys. Before we go into the wild components of the story, give us a little bit of insight into who you are and what you do on the day-to-day right now.
So I am a small man from the north of England, a little town called Huddersfield, which I'm sure a few people may have heard of for football reasons. It's in Yorkshire, northern England, quite a small place, but full of character. And yeah, I like to say I lived the dream. Obviously, I was an aspiring athlete. That would have been the real dream, but try and help everybody else live theirs. And that helps me live my dream.
I love that. I love that. Absolutely. I think being in service to others is so important. So let's dive right into your wild story that you're self-describing. Take us to the beginning of that, because I know you said you have a lot to say about reaching that level of success, and I have a lot to banter with that as well. So start us with the beginning of your story here. I'm curious.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a little bit of, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that could relate, particularly if you're going down the athletic route. So I wanted to be an aspiring athlete. To give you kind of going off the top, I was an aspiring athlete from as long as I can ever remember. You know, people want to be scientists, or people want to be aerospace engineers, want to be astronauts. I wanted to be an athlete, and I wasn't fussed what sport that was. And to be honest, that was probably my downfall. So I was a national level motocross rider, raced a few international races, including a few in the US. I raced at Cahir Creek in California. I was also a track athlete. I ran the 100 meters for Team GB, went to the Junior Olympics when I was 15. And then I was offered a professional contract playing soccer for you guys, or football for us. And unfortunately, I would say my kind of limiting factor was I couldn't choose which one I wanted to do. And then consequently didn't focus on one, and ended up getting a few injuries due to not preparing properly, which led me into what I do now, which is help aspiring athletes take that next level. Yeah, and helping them reach that top level with everything that I feel I required when I was coming through the ranks would have been someone just to say, okay, well, you're really good at this. Let's work on that. We need to work on injury prevention for this. And then who knows where we could have ended up. But top and bottom of it is I was a failed athlete, which I'm proud of, to be honest. I hang my head high. There's a lot of us that didn't quite make it. And a lot of people, fell off the wagon. And my job is to hopefully help people not do that and give them all the tools they need to push on. From there, once I kind of didn't make it as an athlete, was close, didn't quite make it, but that's okay. I thought, okay, well, how can I do something that is very, very similar? What gives me that same buzz? What's going to help me get that same level of adrenaline? I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie, shall we say. And for me, the next step from that was become a coach, someone who can help other people reach that level of success. If I can help other people reach that success, for me, that's I've won. So I went to university, did an undergraduate in sports science, then went to do a master's in strength and conditioning, working in professional soccer clubs, where I realized that isn't everything that it's made out to be. You're very expendable. The wages are very low, although the money wasn't really much of a factor for me. For me, it's more about respect, which I personally didn't receive and my peers didn't receive. So I set out to build my own business, and I saw a real gap when working with the youth athletes that they weren't getting the level of individuality that they required to then progressing to be an elite level athlete. And a lot of kids were falling short, and all they really needed was someone to say, right, we really need to focus on this. You've got a running issue. You need to be more powerful. I've got someone over here who's playing too much. They may be not taking maturation into account. Maybe they're growing at different rates. So I was like, maybe I can be the person that can step in and help nurture them through that phase, that when they get to 18, they have all the tools in their arsenal to push to that next level. So I worked with youth level soccer players for around 2 to 3 years as I was finishing my university studies. Then mutually left the club due to lack of respect, shall we say, is probably the most politically correct way I can put it. And then, yeah, worked on my own business, worked freelance with various athletes, got in contact with a professional boxer, a local professional boxer who worked with 9-time world champion Roy Jones Jr. We worked very, very closely to the point where Roy recognized my skills around the time that he was fighting Mike Tyson and invited me to go and live with him in Florida, which I obviously jumped at the chance. Lived with Roy for around 6 months. We worked very, very closely, got on very well. Then, as we were kind of preparing for fights were getting broken down left, right and centre, and we weren't quite getting that end result that we were looking for. Unfortunately, I had a family tragedy, so came home, and then due to COVID and whatnot, didn't make transfer back out. Ended up working with more high-level soccer players here, and from there, it just gone strength to strength. So hope that hasn't bored everyone too much, and we've still got some people listening. But yeah, that's pretty much my journey in a nutshell. Please fire away, delve in, let's get to it.
I love this story. I have so much to say to it, but I'm going to start with this. You mentioned achieving such a significant goal at 15, and as somebody who was that high achiever when they were young, you work so hard for that. And then when you get there, what was that moment like for you? Because for me, it actually was very anticlimactic.
100%. I would definitely say, if anything, I don't know about yourself, but when you're kind of doing all your training, you're doing all your strength work, all your physical work, all your technical work, all your nutrition's on point, you think that when I get to that level, it's going to be like this big hooray moment.
It's almost like you're going to be a different person, if you will. You're going to feel and be differently.
100%. And then when I got the letter through to say that I had, congratulations, you qualified, represent Team GB, it was like cool, it's another race. And it was just another race against other people. That was literally, I came home, everyone was like, oh, well done. And that was it, life went on. I thought I was going to come home and be some superstar, be all over the papers, but it's not like that. It wasn't like that.
No, and I think that's a common thing for so many people is that when you work so hard for something, you really do think it's going to change who you are. And I know that so many university people can relate to this because you're working hard in university. You're doing the best that you can, balancing studies and health and mental health and all of those things, relationships, things of that nature. And then when you get these big milestones, having to essentially celebrate yourself and not experiencing that outside celebration you wanted is very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would say I struggle with it most because I kind of look back and thought, well, I worked this hard for this moment.
And the moment isn't what you think.
Yeah, I kind of struggled to enjoy it. I almost had a feeling of anxiety that like the world was on my shoulders. Like, well, you've worked hard for this. You can't mess this up now. And then I did quite well, did reasonably well. And it was just another day. It wasn't anything special. It was no different to kind of like a local track meet. Just you kind of had more internal pressure that I put on myself because I knew where I'd reached, but it wasn't what I was expecting at all.
So you were young when that happened. You obviously transitioned into university later. What was that transition like from being so athletically focused to then having to be academically focused? Because I'm just curious, because it's a very different mindset.
It is. But my answer may be a little bit different to others, but it actually really helped me. It helped me because I will hold my hands up. I'm the first one to admit I wasn't the most academic person coming through school and college. I really struggled kind of paying attention, and it later on found out that I was diagnosed with ADHD, which now I understand that actually really helps because when I focus on something, I can hyper-focus. So changing into academia, I tried to have the mindset of it was just like being in the gym or at the track. I have to get my reps in. I have to do this so that then I can get X adaptation or X piece of information to retain. And that was the way that I dealt with it. And that's when I got my biggest success with the academic side.
What did the hyper-focus manifest like in university?
It took me about a year to kind of understand it because everybody else around me was so different and they were different to other people. So at first I felt a little bit of imposter syndrome because I wasn't massively academic before university, whereas I had it in my head that everybody else was. So I was like, well.
That's interesting. Why did you think that?
I kind of saw ways that people were learning, people were studying. A lot of people were taking written down notes, which isn't how I learned, but in my head, I was like, well, they're doing that and they're really smart. So I need to do that too. And then I get quite stressed and anxious with myself that I wasn't retaining the information that same way.
So that was comparison in the academic setting. That's interesting. I've not heard that one before. How did you start to get over that?
I kind of took myself away. And when I realized that I was having conversations with my peers and I was able to describe things in a different way, and then I reflected on how I'd learned that. And it was actually a lot of it was visual that I'd learned from YouTube videos or listening to podcasts. And that's how I retained information because it sparked something in me where I was like, right, okay, I could replicate that whilst I was either watching it or listening to it. And that in turn allowed me to understand it further and then describe it even better when it came to writing it down. So for me, I learned through watching and listening rather than note-taking because you just go went in one ear and out the other.
Did you get a lot of accommodations and help for your learning style in university? Because I know I played the piano when I was young and everybody thought I was like a musical genius. I just had auditory ears, so I could essentially do whatever I heard, right? But she's so smart. She can read notes like nothing we've ever seen. I was really, really little. And when everyone found out that I couldn't do it, it was just absolutely shocking to them. And there was no accommodations for my type of learning, so I ended up quitting the instrument. Did you get accommodations in university? What was that like? And I guess, how did you support yourself through that? Because it's a lot of advocacy that goes into that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was trial and error. So I would try. It's like I said, the first year was really like an experimental year for me. So I was very fortunate that the sports science course didn't really ramp up until year two. If it had been year one, I'd have been resitting it basically because I took 6 months just figuring, okay, let's try that. Nope, that didn't work. Let's try that way. Nope, that didn't work. Oh, Ryan, how do you learn? Right, let me try that. Nope, that didn't work. And then it was literally by just having conversations that I was like, oh, wait, hang on. I'm quite smart, but where have I learned this? And I was like, well, I learned that from watching that video on YouTube, or I learned that from listening to that podcast. And then it started to click then that the more visual and audio it was that I was listening and watching, and the more I could replicate. So I used to listen to podcasts in the gym. This may sound very, very strange, but I would listen.
No, it doesn't sound strange at all.
I would listen to a podcast called Mind Pump. They're all from the States as well. I would have them on whilst I was training, and I would experiment with what they were talking about whilst in the gym. And I'd be like,
That's a lot of ambition, by the way.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but that's how I learn. I'm like, oh, that adds tension to that muscle. Or if I rotate slightly that way, I can get tension on that muscle. And then, you know, the antagonistic pairs, I could feel the eccentric contraction on that one working a lot harder and all that sort of stuff. You know, it sounds a little bit complex, but my brain seems to just, yeah, experiment and it finds its own way. And I found that with the business too. And I think that's really helped with the variety of athletes that I've got, helping them understand how they learn, because I understand now not everybody learns the same way. In fact, we're all extremely different. And I think that's helped me help them.
And that ability to advocate and say, you said, I'm really smart, which I think is super profound. Because it's easy to feel like if you are not learning in the same way that other people in your life, in your sphere, in your community are learning, it's easy to say, well, I'm not good enough. And I love that you make that distinction and say, I am smart. I think that's super powerful and something that more people in university need to hear. Because it can be a really vulnerable, challenging thing to feel vulnerable in that way. Like you can't learn in the same way. Learning style is a really tricky thing.
Yeah, 100%. And I would say I almost ignored, once I kind of understood how I learned, I almost ignored how some of the lecturers were teaching and how some of my peers were learning, because I knew that they were kind of playing a different game almost that I weren't playing. So I weren't going to rate myself on how good I could play their game, because that didn't help me. I knew I was, it might be a little bit egotistical, but I knew I was smart in my own right. I just had to show that.
And I think you have to believe that, right? Because it's easy to feel like you're not. So I want to take it back to some of the things that you said initially about building your business. How did your university set you up for success in building a business? Because employee mindset and business owner mindset are two very different things, dramatically so.
100%. 100%. So the way it kind of helped me was, the way I found out how I learned was trial and error. And the way I approach my businesses.
Well, you have to do that to be an entrepreneur.
that's literally it. And I was like, so I'm getting a lot better at it as well. I don't put too much pressure on. If I try something, it doesn't work the first time. Try it again. If it doesn't work, try it again, or try something else. Just keep trying. Something will work. And there's things even down to, so financially, I didn't used to be great. Now I found a way of putting my finances in different pots and reinvesting it. I've found through just trial and error and giving things a go that you will find a way that works. I used to get really, really stressed with myself. Like, why isn't this working? This should work. That worked for him. Or listen to podcasts, that worked for him.
Well, it's a self-worth thing, right?
Yeah.
With the business, when you build a business, because I've done it more than once, it's easy to feel like, well, if this thing fails, that means I'm a failure.
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes the academic environment creates that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that want to be entrepreneurs, you have to think and be and breathe and feel differently.
Absolutely. And I found that the biggest thing that I found as well was, sometimes you don't realize your own self-worth if you're in the wrong environment. For example, the way that I described it to someone previously, I did a couple of guys that I'm mentoring. If you have a vintage car, if you put that in a brand new car showroom, it looks worthless. If you put that vintage car in a vintage car showroom, it could be worth hundreds of thousands of pounds or dollars. It's knowing the environment that you can show your worth. And my personal experience with that was, I worked in a gym inside near Manchester City, in the city centre, that was a budget gym, shall we say. And I was proud of myself on not being a budget trainer. I like to think, you know, I've got years of experience and years of knowledge and learning and education, that I'm not dissing people that charging $20, $30 a session, but I'm not a $20 or $30 guy. And I found it really difficult trying to sell myself to the athletes and the clients there that were looking for a $20 or $30 cut. Whereas as soon as I removed myself and put myself in more of a boutique athlete-driven gym, I had people knocking down the staff room door to try and work with me. And they didn't care what it cost. They knew my worth, which then I kind of was able to advocate my self-worth to them, and it just spiraled from them. So basically what I'm trying to say is, just because somebody doesn't see your self-worth in one environment doesn't mean that you are worth what they think you are. If you remove yourself and put yourself in a different environment, you could be worth 10 times to somebody else.
So your story really resonates with me in a number of different ways, because there's a really, really big difference between an abusive environment, an environment where you're not celebrated. But when it is abusive and you're not celebrated, that's something I felt in my very first job. Like you, I was so excited. It felt prestigious. It felt intriguing. It felt like everything that I should ever want. And when I was actually in the environment and in the situations, it was terrible, for lack of a better term. And I took so much mental and emotional abuse that I should not have taken, in the name of doing something that I thought other people would be proud of and other people would see and say, oh goodness, Brooke has made it. I think that made it is so dangerous. Because when we get ourselves into a space where we have to do this thing to be good enough, that opens the door to all sorts of issues. For me, I started working at a very young age. I was only 17, so similar to your 15-year-old story. When you're young, you want so badly to please, and you want so badly to be enough, and you want so badly to be worthy that you're willing to put up with stuff that you probably normally wouldn't put up with. And I feel that that's a big thing in the university environment too. How did you know it was the right time to leave? And then what advice would you give people in terms of if they're in a situation where they are not celebrated, what would you say to those people?
Yeah, 100%. So I'll start with, so me personally, when I knew it was the right time to leave, and when I said leave, I'm talking environments that were the top level. So these were elite level soccer clubs that I was in. And
that look very wonderful from the outside looking in.
It literally, from a job title perspective, when you put that on LinkedIn and Instagram, it's like, whoa, look at this guy. This guy he's made it. He's achieved anything, you know, everything he could possibly want. He must be absolutely over the moon, loving life. He must be driving around in really nice cars and, you know, works hard, but it must be a blast for him. He's done all of his hard work. It's categorically incorrect. For me, the point where I was at the highest in everyone else's eyes was the lowest I've personally been. And when I knew it was time to leave was very, very simply a lack of respect. I was not respected for my expert opinion. I was more or less kind of told that if I didn't want to do it their way, there were 10,000 people queuing up behind me that would quite happily do it. And I was free to move on and try to do it yourself, big man. So for me, as soon as I no longer feel respected as an equal or as a professional, then for me, it's time for me to step away and amicably say, thank you for everything, but it's now time that I went on, you know, a different venture. And that's exactly what I did. There's been two occasions I've done that, and there's neither of them that I look back and think I made a hasty or incorrect decision. I made them based on my own morals, and I will always stand by my own morals, whether it costs me friends or if it costs me finances. I'm always prepared to do what I feel is right. And if I'm not respected, then I will shake hands and move on.
The time where you said when other people thought I was at my highest, I was at my lowest, I felt that.
Mm-hmm. 100%. There's been times where I should have been, in everyone else's eyes, over the moon. I was thinking to myself, I was like, well, this is not everything it cracked up to be. I don't really want to do this anymore. I've worked all this time, all this money into my education, all the graft I've put in, and really not what I thought it was. So I think it's time to leave.
This is a little bit of a sidebar, but you said respect is so big for you. And I have to say, I admire that about men. When they're not respected, they usually walk away a little faster than a woman. And I think getting the what's the right word? I'm looking for it, but really the push to leave a situation that's not right for you can be really, really challenging, just depending upon your personality type. What are the things that you were thinking about, and what are the processes you went through when you were making that decision? I know it sounds like you did it, you know, in a fairly easy way, but what was that like? And did you do any exercises or processes that were really helpful in determining that?
Yeah, I've made that sound very, very easy for me to do and very cutthroat. It definitely wasn't. I've made that sound super oversimplistic. For me, I had the devil and the angel on my shoulder, and the angel was telling me, Carl, this is not right for you. You deserve better than this. They shouldn't be talking to you like this. You should be, for want of a better phrase, you should be kind of like the God to these guys. They should be coming to you for advice, and they should be taking that on board because you've got their best interests at heart. And then the devil was saying to me, well, look at the position that you're in. You've worked your ass off to get all the way here. People would kill to be where you are right now. Are you stupid? You know, you'll never get to this level again. You'll never, you know, it's going to be a black mark on your name. Do you really want to go home to people and say, yeah, I quit? And then I kind of had the epiphany of, I haven't quit. I've come, I've given it my all. And if I'm not in a position where I can't give people duty of care and give them 100% of me, then it's not right for me. And that was the kind of the tipping point where I said, right, okay, yes, it's a great opportunity. The experience has been fantastic, but I'm not prepared to put myself in a position where I have to be a lesser version of me just to please everybody else. So that was kind of the tipping point where I said, no, that for me is it. I'm moving on. And if there's kind of any advice I would give people, particularly if you're kind of new to the industry, is you have to put the hard yards in. And I firmly believe that you have to sometimes experience that kind of thing for you to then understand at what point, how much are you willing to put in and how much are you willing to sacrifice to be in a position and be that person that to everybody else looks really cool. Are you willing to sacrifice your morals? Are you willing to graft, you know, 14, 16 hour days and not get a thank you for it? Are you willing to do that? If you are, brilliant. You're probably, you know, maybe a little bit more resilient than I am. But for me, I wasn't. I simply demand respect. And if I'm not getting that, then it's not for me.
It's knowing what you're willing to tolerate is huge. Because if you don't know what you're willing to tolerate and you're put in a position in the workforce, in the workplace where those morals and values are being crossed over, it's easy to say, I'm being too sensitive. What are three pieces of advice or things you'd share with university students?
The first one, and it is really, you know, kind of corny, but chase your dreams and don't stop until you feel like you're almost there. Because I can guarantee you the point when you feel like you're there, they'll change and you have different dreams. And that to me really excites me. So the first one would be always keep chasing your dreams. Even I got told many a time that I wouldn't make it as an athlete. I got really close. I got told I wouldn't make it as a coach. To me, I did make that, and I continue to make that and continue to get better and better and better. So don't stop chasing your dreams. The second one for me would be personal reflection has been huge for me. I'm the first one to admit I laughed at that when I was in university. I was like, personal reflection, that I know who I am. I know what I'm going to do. I know I'm good enough. I was a guy, I had a big ego. I was, you know, I was the guy who was a good athlete. And then I got to university where everybody else was more or less the same. They'd tried to be athletes and couldn't make it. And I was like, how do I still continue to elevate now that I'm not the guy? And the way I did that was I looked back and I thought, right, okay, well, I am good at this, but I need to work on that. And that was personality. There was areas of my personality that I really need to work on. I used to be quite hot-headed. I used to think that my opinion was always right. And personal reflection taught me, if sometimes you are the quietest person in the room, you take a lot more information in. And that was hard for me because I was always the center of attention. Once I reflected and realized that's what I needed to work on, I learned so much more. I learned more about myself, I learned more about others, some positive, some negative, but I was constantly learning. And that kind of leads into number three, is always keep learning. Always keep learning. I go into meetings now, and I'm sure you're exactly the same. I go to meetings now with, you know, people who are 60, 70 years of age, who have been millionaires, and they're still reading now. They're still learning. They still want to get better. I used to think, I was like, when I get to 30, I know everything I need to know. I just need to keep doing it. For me, the more I learn, the more I know I need to learn. So never think you're done learning. Just reflect on the areas that you are weak in and learn on those. And then reflect again, where are you weak? Learn on those. So for me, those would be my three. Never stop chasing your dreams. Always do personal reflection. So continue to reflect on yourself, both professionally, I'd say physically as well, professionally, physically, and mentally. And then never stop learning. Those would be my key three.
I love those. And I love how vulnerable and open you were about sharing about your personality, because that's not easy to do. Thank you so much for spending your time here and sharing some of your insights and wisdom with it. We so appreciate it.
It's been an absolute blast. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.